Hey everybody, it's Brock Falk, and I want to thank you for listening to this message from Heritage Church of Christ. We would be thrilled to share more content like this with you and make it easy for you to share it with others. You can find more messages like this on our podcast, or you can download our smartphone app by searching for Heritage Church of Christ in your app store. But most importantly, I hope this message encourages you to take a next step toward a thriving relationship with Jesus. Enjoy.
I don't know if you've thought about it this way. It's kind of, we've made a few jokes already about daylight savings time, but I know that's kind of on everybody's mind today. But maybe you haven't thought of it this way, that today is actually the shortest day of the year, which seems funny, but it's the only day of the year that there's just 23 hours today, right? Like we skipped one. And that kind of messes with your rhythm, you know? It kind of messes with your body clock and all of that kind of stuff. And I've got a lot of friends. I'm like Jeff. I look forward to this, you know, longer light in the evenings and all of that kind of thing. But I've got a lot of friends every year who seem to tell me they do not like daylight savings time. In fact, I took a poll in first service and over half of the audience said they wish we didn't do this. How about you? Like, are anybody that's not a fan of daylight savings time, you really wish that this didn't happen? All right. Yeah, it's quite a few of you. The older I get, the more I start to notice it messing with my, you know, body rhythm and all of that kind of stuff. And I've had friends that have told me that for quite a while, and that it kind of messes with, you know, throws off their sleep schedule. And I, for a long time, I've thought, well, I mean, it's just an hour. Maybe you can make it up a few minutes at a time during the week or something. But I did a little investigating, and it turns out that science is on the side of my sleepy friends in this argument. In fact, as I studied it a little bit, I figured out that there are some real and measurable problems that seem to crop up in our society as a result of this daylight saving time thing that we're doing. Like, there was a study published in the Journal of Applied Psychology in 2009 that said that on the Monday after the beginning of daylight saving time, there is a statistical, a noticeable spike in on-the-job injuries and severe injuries that happen in the workplace tomorrow. So, like, be careful is what I'm saying, you know? And there was another study, it was actually published just 2 months ago in Current Biology, that examined years worth of motor vehicle accident records in the United States and showed that on the Monday and Tuesday after the beginning of daylight saving time, there's a 6% increase in the trend of motor vehicle accidents, many of them very serious. And then in 2012, the University of Alabama published a study that said that on the Monday and Tuesday following daylight saving time, there is a 10% increase in the occurrence of heart attacks in our country. And so I've got a couple of takeaways for you from that information. The first is, your preacher says you need a nap today. All right? Like, preacher's orders. I'll write you a prescription if I have to. But there is, like, there's a golf tournament coming on CBS this afternoon. It'll be perfect. If you'll turn that on, you will be out in just a few minutes and you'll be safer, you know? Like, yeah, you know, it's for your heart health and it's for your safety on the job and on the road. But the second takeaway is that we ought to be paying attention to the rhythms and the routines in our life that make us healthy. Because part of the takeaway from the information I shared from those studies is that just a small change, just a small disruption to our routine of connecting to rest can have a pretty detrimental effect and put us at some risk. And, you know, it's amazing how with today's technology, we actually have access to a lot of data and insight about our day-to-day health and habits that we didn't have before. I know some of you are doing this too. You're using technology to track your nutrition and track your exercise and hopefully utilizing that information to help you make better choices moving forward. I'm trying to do some of that same thing. If you're not a smart device user, you know, you're not using smartphone or whatever for that, you're getting that kind of feedback maybe from a doctor, from blood work, from, you know, the different kinds of data that comes your way to help you make decisions about making healthy habits in your life. I recently started wearing a smartwatch that's able to track not only my heart rate but also my movement, and I learned that if I wear it overnight when I go to bed, it'll actually create like a set of reports about my sleep habits. And so now I'm looking at these sleep patterns of mine and trying to make adjustments to my bedtime and all of that so that I can get better rest than I was getting before. And you know what this is like. I mean, we're all getting data about ourselves. We're getting our cholesterol numbers and all of this other information to try to help us make good choices. But you also know that sometimes there are just factors involved that you can't control, right? I mean, because when your doctor tells you about the cholesterol stuff, like sometimes they're going to say, you know what, some of this is just genetic. It's stuff that you can't do anything about. Sometimes there are factors that are contributing to the detriment of your habits and your routines that you just can't control. If you have ever struggled with jet lag, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? If you've ever had insomnia in your life, or if you've ever had a newborn in your house that liked to eat multiple times during the night, you know that there are sometimes just things that come up in your schedule. There are interruptions and distractions that you can't control, and they're going to mess with your routines. Like, I can look back at the history of my sleep tracking app on my phone now, and I can see that the nights when thunderstorms blew in at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, my sleep pattern was different, right? And I didn't have any control over that. And in the same way, your life has all kinds of storms and struggles that can interrupt your healthy rhythms and create problems for you. But when you make an effort to restore rhythm, to get back into the kind of rhythm that makes you a healthier person, it can help you get back on track. And I want to convince you this morning that that same principle is true in your spiritual life. I want to convince you that there are rhythms to the spiritual journey, the spiritual experience, that not only make you a healthier person, but these rhythms can actually reveal a depth and a meaning to the spiritual life that you may not have even been able to imagine before. You may not have realized that it was possible. I talked to one of our members after first service. This is not in my notes here, but it was a great story. She told me about a time when her daughter took piano lessons for like 6 years and was doing well. And the teacher sat her down one day and said, "Listen, what are your goals for playing the piano? Like, do you want to compete? Do you want to, like, you know, play in front of audiences? What do you want to do?" Because, and the teacher said, "You know how to read music. You know how to play this thing. Like, you know how, if your goal is just to play a song or to be able to learn how to play a song, you know how to do that, and we don't need to meet anymore. But if you have bigger goals than that, then I can take you further to help you become better at this habit, this practice, this discipline that you're trying to learn." And as we talked about that after service, I thought, you know, here's the thing. So many of us haven't even imagined that there might be another level of spirituality that we could connect to. It's not just learning just the scriptures a little bit better. It's not just going to church a little more consistently. We're talking about a level of spirituality, a depth and a meaning to spiritual life that maybe you haven't realized before. And so I want to pause right here for just a second. I want to talk to you specifically, if you're the kind of person for whom church is hard. Like, if you're the kind of person that you've sometimes struggled to see the connection between what we talk about on Sunday and what happens in your life Monday through Saturday. If you're the kind of individual who's ever wondered why Christianity doesn't feel more personal for you, or if you've ever looked around in a room like this and wondered, is everybody else like on the same page that I am, or are they like further along? If you're the kind of person who has ever asked yourself, questioned whether your faith is making any difference or any progress at all, then I want to convince you this morning to start paying attention to the spiritual rhythms of your life that we're going to talk about today. Because I'm convinced that having a healthy spiritual rhythm, in the same way that you have enacted some other rhythms for the sake of your health in other areas of your life, I'm convinced that having a healthy spiritual rhythm is like a key that can unlock the power and the meaning and the depth of your spiritual experience. And so I hope that you'll lean in and listen specifically for how that might work in your life this morning. If you were here last week, you know that we started a new series. We've called it Plugged In, and we are asking ourselves about how we can stay connected to Jesus. In the passage that we read last week, Jesus described himself as a vine and described us as branches that receive all of our nourishment, all of our connection by remaining in Christ. And so then after we learned about that goal, after we learned about that vision Jesus has for us and making our lives fruitful, then we started asking the question, okay, how do you do that? How do you stay connected to God, stay connected to Christ in a way that makes a difference? And this morning, we're going to lean in together to some wisdom from one of the earliest Christian teachers that existed, one of the first Christian ministers in our history. He was a first century Roman citizen named Paul, and he was a missionary. He launched churches all over the northern Mediterranean rim. He traveled from city to city, and he would stop for a while, and he would help people come to understand the good news about Jesus, and he would set them up as a church community, and then he would move on and go to another city and do it all again, start over someplace else. And so he established these great relationships everywhere that he went. But every time he would leave one of these cities, every time he would leave one of those places to go somewhere else and start over, he left behind a little infant church, a little church that was kind of still just getting started, and he left them behind trusting that God was going to help them stay connected and stay strong in the faith that he had given them. And we're fortunate that we've got some copies of some of the written instructions and advice that he left for them or sent for them about how to stay connected, about how to stay the course when the faith journey got difficult and when there were distractions. And some of this instruction is just as relevant for us as it was for those original audiences over 1900 years ago. So I want to show you some of this morning in the New Testament book of 1 Timothy. It's about two-thirds of the way through the table of contents in your New Testament. When you get to 1 Timothy, you're holding an ancient letter. All right? It's a letter that Paul wrote to this next generation pastor that he was mentoring and training and equipping to follow in his footsteps and do the kind of work that he had been doing. So Paul, he's moving on from city to city. He's doing his church planting thing, but he left this next generation pastor, this young man named Timothy, left him in the city of Ephesus, which is in modern day Turkey. He left him in Ephesus to take care of, to lead and provide direction for this church that Paul had planted and that Paul cared for. Now, if you've ever left something really important to you with a kid, you know a little bit about what Paul was experiencing in this moment, right? Like if you've ever handed the keys to your vehicle, you know, over to a teenager and watched them drive away, you know, maybe it was more serious than that. If you've ever left your child with a babysitter whose name was not you, you know, like anybody, it didn't matter if they had like decades of parenting experience, leaving your kid with somebody that's not you, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, I hope they pay close attention. I hope that they're trained. I hope they're attentive. I hope that everything goes great, you know. And Paul's facing some of that because he has invested a lot of himself in this church in Ephesus. These are people that he knows and loves and cares for, and he wants nothing but the best for their spiritual journey, but he's got to go, and so he's leaving Timothy in charge. And he leaves he's concerned about everything that Timothy and the Ephesian church are going to face together. And specifically, he was concerned that there was going to start to be this influx of teaching that didn't match the teaching that Paul had given them. He was concerned that there would be an influx of instruction and rumor and conjecture that wouldn't match the story and the good news of the gospel. Now, Paul, he figured some of this was just going to be innocently incorrect information, but that there was also going to be some of the information that was maliciously misleading. And he didn't want these Christians, these brand new baby Christians, to give up. He didn't want their faith to be led astray. And so he left Timothy, who coincidentally was probably one of the first people to ever be a third generation Christian. He grew up in a home with a Christian mother and a Christian grandmother. All right. He was raised to know and love Jesus. But Paul leaves Timothy in charge and he sends him this letter with some instructions explaining some of the things to watch out for, some of the things to be on the lookout for. And after he talks about some of those, he says this in chapter 4, verse 6. He says, "If Timothy, if you point out these things that I've been talking about, these concerns that I have, these things to watch out for, if you point these things out to the brothers and sisters in the church at Ephesus, you will be a good minister of Christ Jesus, nourished on the truths of the faith and of the good teaching that you have followed." Now, as a pastor, part of Timothy's responsibility is to inform and equip all the members of their church to the dangers and pitfalls that are all around them. And Paul is teaching Timothy how to do that well. But here's something Paul also knew that we need to recognize how it applies to our own life. Paul also knew that Timothy's effectiveness as a church leader, his ability to positively influence the faith of someone else, was entirely dependent on his personal faithfulness as a Christ follower. What that means is, if Timothy, if his ability to be a mentor, to be a spiritual guide, to be a teacher, if any of that was going to work, it was going to have to be grounded in Timothy's personal connection to God. This is what we talked about last week when Jesus said, "If you remain in me, then your life can be fruitful. Your life will produce fruit." This is what Jesus was saying, was that if you're not personally connected, your life is not going to be able to produce the kind of fruit anywhere else that I have in mind for you to produce. And so at this point in the letter, Paul turns his attention away from Timothy, "Here's all the things you should be doing for the people in the church." And he suddenly turns his attention toward what Timothy ought to be doing for his own spiritual health. The rhythms, the routines, the habits that Timothy needs to enact and adopt in order to be a spiritually healthy person. And Paul emphasizes that he reflects on the truth of the faith and the good teaching that Timothy inherited, that he received from his mother and grandmother. And he reminds Timothy, keep all those lessons in mind. But that's not just something that you can just do by willpower, which is why Paul writes what he wrote next. Here's what he says, verse 7. He says, "Timothy, have nothing to do with godless myths and old wives' tales, but instead, or rather, train yourself to be godly." Now, I think those terms, godless myths and old wives' tales, those are kind of interesting terms to use. And when I think of old wives' tales, I think about stuff like, you know, you can't go swimming within 30 minutes after you eat lunch and that kind of deal. You know, but he's talking about the kinds of rumors and the kinds of suspicions that are floating around their religious discussion and that are kind of seeping. There's information and there's guesses that are seeping in from other religious influences in their city, and there are people who are suspecting that because Jesus is coming back that maybe we shouldn't work anymore, maybe we shouldn't get married anymore. And Paul is saying, no, don't have anything to do with all of those rumors. Focus on the truth of what I taught you. And then he uses this phrase, train yourself to be godly. See, Paul knew that there were always going to be distractions like that. And he knew that there were going to be problems that were going to arise that Timothy would need to deal with as a leader in the church. But he also knew that those problems would occupy as much of Timothy's time as he would give them. The rumors and the arguments about unimportant matters would take up all of Timothy's attention if he let it. And Paul is trying to remind him, faithfulness requires focus. faithfulness demands focus. It requires intentional effort, which is why Paul is instructing Timothy, train yourself. Create a habit. Create a rhythm. Get into the discipline of making yourself become a godly person. Now, you and I have had our own experiences with training, right? You've probably been through a bunch of training on the job where you had to sit through seminars, you had to go get continuing education, you had to sit through different orientations or learn how to use a new software and every bit of that. I mean, you had to learn new techniques and new skills or maybe you've done some physical training to build up your strength and endurance and athletic ability to be able to compete or to be able to be at your best, regardless of whether your primary training has been physical stuff or educational stuff. Here's what training always has in common is that you have to show up. You have to show up on a consistent basis. You have to pay attention. You have to focus. And then you have to start utilizing, practicing the use of the new skills that you're developing. In fact, when Paul says train yourself, the word he uses here is the same word that we translate in English as gymnastics. It was interesting. Just last Sunday, I was standing right here, right after service, and one of our little 8-year-old girls here in the church come running up to me, hugs my leg, and says, Pastor Brock. She said, I got to be in a gymnastics meet yesterday, and I won the whole thing. And I was so thrilled for her, and I was so proud, and I was celebrating and all of that. And I said, do you have any pictures of yourself, you know, getting the award? She's telling me about being up on the podium, and they put a medal around her neck and all that. I said, you have pictures of that? She said, better. She said, my mom's got video on her phone, you know. And so it was awesome. Mom handed the phone over, and I got to watch this little girl. She competed on the balance beam and the uneven bars and the vault and the floor exercise and all of that. I was instantly amazed at the athleticism and the precision that she was demonstrating in all of those disciplines. And then my imagination started running about how clumsy and ridiculous I would look if I tried to do any of those things. I was picturing my big old hairy feet on that balance beam, you know, or picturing me just impaling myself on the vault, trying to run as fast as I could and hitting that thing, you know. And it was easy to imagine how quickly I would get injured, you know, trying to do the things that this little girl was doing. But it was obvious that she had been in some serious training. She had been practicing. She had been disciplined and focused, and she had worked hard, and her hard work had paid off with obvious results. In fact, if you see her around this morning, I asked her to wear her medal around her neck. So make a big fuss over her if you see her for winning first place. But he's thinking in terms of that kind of training. He's thinking about gymnasts. He's thinking about athletes. And he's got respect for that kind of training and all of the discipline that requires. But the training he's really interested in, the training he's trying to assign and prescribe for Timothy, is spiritual training. Here's what he says in the next verse. He says, physical training, and he uses that word again, like gymnastics. He says, physical training is of some value, but godliness, or the result of spiritual training, has value for everything. It has value for all things. When you devote your attention, when you devote your focus to spiritual training, Paul says this has value for every area of your life. And this is where our imagination needs to start to track along with God. Because what Paul is trying to tell us is that our spiritual training has value for our social interactions and our career engagement and our family life. That our spiritual training has value in areas of our lives that maybe we hadn't imagined it ever touching. Physical training, he says, is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, and it holds promise for both the present life and the life to come. Paul's using this athleticism, this energy, this image that Timothy would have been so familiar with, but he's making a point about spiritual training. And he says, practicing your faith is what helps you make progress. And as I studied this text, I started to wonder about you. I started to wonder if you've ever taken a second to consider the idea that being a follower of Jesus takes practice. Now, some of you, I know, you've experienced this. You're kind of already on board with that idea. You've come to realize that the spiritual journey is a journey of stepping out in faith and sometimes struggling to have enough faith, and you keep trying and you keep pressing forward. But I want to talk to you for just a second if you're somebody that had never considered the idea that the spiritual experience is a process. It's a discipline that takes practice. And here's why this is so important for me to stop and talk about right now. Is because if you ever thought that once you decided to follow Jesus, that everything would just instantly change, if you ever thought that, chances are you've been walking around being pretty disappointed with yourself. And that's not what God has in mind for you. That's not what God wants for you. In fact, being a successful follower of Jesus is a process that has always required effort and attention. If you read through the stories of Jesus' life, everywhere he goes, he is followed by an entourage of people. And sometimes it's just two or three. Sometimes it's 12. Sometimes it's 70. Sometimes it's 500. But there's all of these people that are following Jesus around, and they're listening to what he's teaching, and they're watching what he's doing and paying attention to the miracles. But none of those people, not a single one of those people, became a fully formed and fully matured disciple overnight. Jesus never, ever looked at his disciple and one of his disciples and said, boom, you've arrived. He could have done that miracle, but he didn't. It was a process. And every one of Jesus' followers experienced some shining moments in their faith journey where they stepped out in faith and they were brave and they did the right thing and they were courageous. And there were moments when one guy walked on water. There were moments when some of them were able to cast out demons. There were moments when they were able to heal the sick. And then there were some moments when their faith wasn't even strong enough to acknowledge that they were Jesus' friend. And it was a process. It was a journey. It was a discipline. But it's always been a process. And it takes time and it takes attention and effort and dedication. And there's really good news to go along with that. The good news is that the work doesn't make life harder. The good news from Jesus, the promise from Jesus, is that the work of being a Christ follower actually makes life easier than the life that you lived on your own, the life that you can live without him. But the great challenge to being a disciple of Jesus, a successful disciple of Jesus, is just getting distracted. It's getting distracted and sidetracked. Because it is so easy to let the concerns of this life, it's so easy to let the worries of this world, it's so easy to let the input and the pressure from outside sources, it's so easy to let distractions creep in and put faith on a back burner. And then there's this other risk, and this one is particularly unique to religious people. People who have already found their way into religion, there is this great risk of getting into religion and thinking that you figured out how it all works and starting to live according to your own spiritual obedience and trying to live according to religious rules that you have decided are the most important. There is this great temptation and struggle. It's so easy to revert back to counting on yourself and counting on your own righteousness instead of trusting in the generous and free gift of grace that Jesus has made available to us. And so Dallas Willard, a Christian author that you ought to discover if you haven't already, he writes this. He says, as disciples of Jesus, we aren't trying to be different people. We're training to be different people. It's not just a matter of willpower. It's not just a matter of flipping a switch. It's not just a matter of gritting your teeth and just forcing your way through it. It's a matter of training. It's a matter of consistent connection. It's a matter of practice. It's a matter of discipline. And we have to be reminded of this. We need to be reminded of this because this is at the heart of the gospel for us to understand this, that our spiritual transformation will never happen as a result of our own ability. Our spiritual transformation will never happen as a result of our resume or even our own obedience. Our spiritual transformation will happen as a process that happens to us by God's grace and not something that we control. But it is a process we can resist. It is a process that we can avoid. It is a process that we can walk away from, especially if we get distracted. So I want to encourage you the way that Paul encouraged Timothy. I want to encourage you the way that Paul, I think, would speak to you today. If he was writing a letter from whatever mission point he was at, and he was writing back to the church at Heritage, to not get distracted. Don't get distracted by the stuff that doesn't matter. Don't get distracted by the little side conversations and the little theories about this and that. Don't get distracted by your daily pursuits. Don't get distracted by the worries of this world. But instead, train yourself. Train yourself to be godly. Develop a rhythm of spiritual discipline. In fact, my challenge to you is that you would begin to develop a rhythm of spiritual exercise that keeps you connected to truth. You need a regular habit, a daily habit of inviting God into your day. You need to make sure that God has frequent appointments on your calendar. And you don't set the agenda. You show up and you let God set the agenda. And here's the beautiful part of it, is that this rhythm of spiritual exercise, this rhythm of spiritual discipline, it can be as unique as you are. It can be as unique as your stage of life and your work schedule and your learning style and your temperament and your interests. It can be something you look forward to every single day. But you got to make room. You got to make space in your life. You got to make room in your schedule, time on your calendar, for God to have access to your heart. John Ortberg says, practices or spiritual disciplines like reading scripture, praying, They're important, but not because they prove how spiritual we are. They're important because God can use them to lead us to life. They are not life in themselves, but God can use them to lead us to life. And so my invitation to you, my challenge to you, and I want to speak to you particularly if you're somebody who maybe this is the extent of your spiritual practice right now. And that, I want to commend you for that. But I want to invite you into something deeper. Because God's knocking on the door of your heart saying, I want access to you. I want time with you. I want an opportunity when you drown out the rest of the noise, when you turn down all the volume on everything else and just give me access to you. God can do stuff in that time. God can do stuff with that focus. God can do stuff with that attention that can change every other arena every other concern, every other relationship, and every other facet of your life. Physical training, Paul says, has some value, but this kind of spiritual training, this godliness, has value for every part of you. And so the invitation for you even this week, and it's a simple start, is to say, where can I make space for God? Where can I make space for quiet? Where can I make space for solitude? Where can I make space where the music is either turned off or the radio is turned off, or I have a chance to hear music that's just going to help me focus on the Lord? Where can I make space for prayer? Not the kind of prayer where I do all the talking, but the kind of prayer where I show up and listen. Where can I make space for reading, for learning more about who God is and what God has in store for me? Where can I make space for learning more from those who have gone before me, connecting with God? How can I instill more discipline into my life, a healthy habit, a healthy rhythm of spiritual practice? Because when we do that together, that's the way that God bears fruit in our lives and in our community and in our church.